and welcome to episode 43 of season 9 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final terrible movie in the Die Hard series, Die Hard 5, A Good Day to Die Hard, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to go through the torture of another 5 minutes of this movie is my good friend Alan Sanders of the Alan Sanders Show. So, welcome back, and once again, thank you very much for taking the plunge with me on this one, Alan.
Oh, absolutely. I guess in some ways we had to close out the entirety of the series, even though honestly it's only a trilogy in my mind.
Oh, I agree. It's a trilogy plus two appendices, I guess you can say, and they're not even any good. That actually, they're like the appendix. They're just something that you just don't need. And
it's almost like somebody got a high budget fan fiction agreement. Like, it used the name in the title, but they didn't know what they were doing. They thought they were making a Die Hard movie.
You would call this fan fiction? Oh my God.
Have you read some fan fiction out there? Yeah.
I've read fan fiction.
It's pretty bad.
I don't know. This is one of those things that, I don't know. I mean, I give credit to John Moore, that he got to direct a Die Hard movie, but he will now always be known as the director of the worst Die Hard movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing against the guy. I'm sure that he really thought that he might be able to make this terrible script a little better. And when it comes to the pyrotechnics and the action scenes, I think he does that. But unfortunately, good special effects and action scenes do not make a better movie. It makes it a little more tolerable, a little more palatable, I guess you could say.
So. And I think, isn't that the problem though? We talked about it on the last episode. These two movies, 4 and 5, but 5 more so. It's like somebody who thinks they know what a Die Hard movie is. That's why I call it like a fanfic. They think they know, and they think they like it because the first movie, look at those action sequences, but there wasn't as many as you may think. And the whole point about it was, it's an ordinary guy who's just managing to bluff his way through. And somehow we can associate and relate to him because we're like, could you imagine doing what he's doing? But now we're like, no one can imagine. You have to be like a cartoon character to get through what he's going through.
Right. I think part of it, and I've mentioned this numerous times, is that the fourth and fifth movies in this series feel as if, what they were trying to do to this franchise is the same thing they've done with other franchises that actually helped make it work better. For instance, Mission Impossible, James Bond, they made the switch, in the early 2000s to more action heavy stories with, plots that are a lot thinner, but they still made them work.
I would argue that the Mission Impossible movies didn't thin the plot. In fact, if anything, I thought the writing went along with it. And I think James Bond, for the most part, until the last two, I wasn't a big fan of Spectre. And I do think No Time to Die was, it struggled to try to figure an end.
Mm-hmm.
But Skyfall may be the best James Bond movie that was ever made.
Oh, for sure. All right. So let's actually go back to talking about Die Hard 5, if we must.
Okay. We must.
So episode 43 begins with the masseur finishing his job and ends with John continuing to shoot. So we ended things on Friday with, she's not even a cliffhanger, but just the knowing that Yuri has finally decided that he was going to, get rid of his nemesis. And again, we talked on Friday about the fact that it doesn't make any sense the way that everything really plays out, because how does the masseur know that no one gave him the signal that what he's supposed to be doing now is kill Shigaran? We don't know, but somehow maybe he's telepathic. Going back with we keep talking about that the. That these are superheroes and stuff like that. So maybe, they have an empath. That's what it comes down
to. Yeah, right.
We're trying to make this more interesting. We're trying to find some things that are happening here that we're like, okay, That makes a little more sense, maybe. I don't know. Probably not. So, yeah.
That's what it is. The radioactive pixie dust that was supposed to keep them from dying, which they all should have, was activating their early X-Men mutant talents, and one of them was telekinesis. You figured it out.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's in Moscow, which is like 24 hours. It's very, very far away from
yeah, but from you know, maybe they brought him up for the weekend to like talk about that scheme, it's in the director's cut that was left out on the floor, but it was in the director's
cut. This is the director's cut. So
no, the director's cut, like his personal one.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah. So again, we get a few seconds of the masseur, finishing off the job and Chagarin's body, finally knowing that it's gone. And then we get a shot of Yuri on this cell phone, completely ecstatic about the fact that Chagarin is dead. And, he just looks around, loving the silence, and then he takes the cell phone and smashes it against the wall. Which I guess maybe to try to keep people from figuring out that he's connected to it. I don't know.
This is the second or third time we're already seeing him all of a sudden give these like weird reactions to death. He almost looks like he's going to need a cigarette when he first is listening to the dying gasps of of this guy, and then he goes into a rageful throw. It's interesting. It's almost like they're trying to say, oh, by the way, in case you weren't sure, he's a psycho.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. In fact, I wonder, here's the director saying, okay, and now is when the audience finally figures out you're a psycho, and cue psycho. And then like, well, I guess this is what a psycho would do. I mean, it's very, I think I said this last episode, they're very caricaturish. They're very cartoonish. They're not, there's no development to these villains like we are used to in the original trilogy.
Not at all. And then the shot changes and we see Irina and she's talking on a walkie talkie and she goes, Static 4, we're ready to take off. And she goes, Static 4, do you copy? And, then we get to see the body of one of the guys that John killed. Just slouched on the ground, holding his gun. Static 4 is not around. And they give us a nice shot of his walkie-talkie on the ground next to him. Just hearing her voice through the whole thing, but not really, And then she looks at... As you called him on Friday, Drax, who turns around and is curious, he's getting ready for something. And then the shot changes and we're back with Yuri. And Yuri is trying to keep himself calm as he's walking and he hears something behind him. He turns around and he sees, hey, what do you know? John and Jack have shown up. What a surprise.
They managed to hear what was going on and they realized there are voices this way. They missed the multiple gunshots, but they heard his phone call.
Correct. Well, again, it was silent the way that the masseur killed him, so they wouldn't have heard that.
Well, no, exactly. Right. But like 30 seconds ago, Rish plugs a guy in the temple and then shoots at least five, if not six more times.
Exactly. That's true. But why would they hear that? Come on.
Exactly. So the concrete is so thick.
When they're yelling at each other, in the middle of a chase in the separate cars, they can hear each other. But when they're just in the next room, they can't hear, the sound of gunshots or anything.
Right. And that would reverberate through the whole of Chernobyl.
That's right.
They don't hear it.
That's right. And Jack is so happy that he finally found Yuri and he goes, Yuri. And, John comes behind him and John's a little suspicious of the whole thing. And he goes, hey, where's the dancer?
Oh, by the way, do we get that look, a callback maybe to although in a much lesser form, of Hans Gruber, because all of a sudden his facial expression goes from the triumphant to, oh, I'm supposed to be like weaker and maybe even sicker. And you see him try really hard to try to pretend like, oh, I just got away. Oh, no, dear, no one of them.
That's right.
Yeah, but he's not near as good as Alan Rickman.
That's right. He's just coughing off. He's coughing up a lung here,
But you can see it on his face. He tries really hard as an actor because he's got that triumphant still over the phone call to like, Jack. Oh. Yeah. Hey. Yeah.
And Jack goes, "Oh, are you okay? Are you hurt?" And he goes, "No, I'm good." And he coughs a little more, and then he goes, and weakly, he goes, "I'm all right."
And yeah, by the way, I don't walk this tall anymore. Yeah, I don't know what was thinking. Oh, my shoulders are hunched, and my lower back. I gotta lean on the rail.
We know that he was shot, so he is, you know, walking wounded at this point. But he seems to have forgotten that fact.
He wasn't all last minute or last episode.
That's right. No, but he was shot back when they were in the hotel in Moscow. So
doesn't matter.
It goes back to the mutant powers. You know, he has he can heal very quickly. You know, and you know, John Ever the detective goes, "Hey, what's in these boxes? You know, is this? Do you think a callback to Seven? You know, what's in the box? What's in the box?" and at this point, Yuri changes the subject and goes, "Thank God you're here, Jack. We have to leave. They're coming back any minute. Just let me get the file." And he's like turning around. And again, that also reminds me of the callback to Rickman, where he's like, "Oh, let's just go this way." And we see that he's about to go get the gun. Yeah, you know, that's hiding on behind that he put on the side. You know, that thing. And then John goes again. He goes, "Hey, what's in the boxes?" And Jack then responds. He goes, "Hey, it's U-235, weapons-grade uranium, armored cases." And then Yuri just starts coughing a little more. So it's, like, really funny. Jack is not concerned about the fact that there is a weapons-grade uranium just lying around. Of course, that's what we got in Chernobyl.
By the way, the shot, and I think it's supposed to be his POV, but all of a sudden, the gun that we knew he must have kicked somewhere away from the body is now back at his foot, because it looks like he's looking at, okay, if I can just get to the gun.
Yeah. Again, it's a callback to
Hans. It's definitely a callback to Gruber, but at the same time, remember, he kicked something that sounded like the gun away from the body last episode.
That's right.
Now it's right back where it was. It's the disappearing, reappearing body along with the disappearing, reappearing gun.
Yes, exactly, which makes perfect sense.
Which may be another superpower. We might have a Nightcrawler in this story. We just didn't know it.
You never know. You never know. and then John says, "You mean the bomb kind?" He goes, "Yeah, the bomb kind." And Yuri then starts trying to walk in a different direction. And John goes, "Hey, not so fast, Eddie." Now, I don't know why he calls him Eddie. Like, I'm trying to think of what the reference is trying to be by him saying, is it like Fast Eddie type of thing? I don't know. Like, what's the, you have any idea what he possibly referring to when he says not so fast Eddie?
Well, I when you said that, you know, like, hey, like the callback to Fast Eddie reminds me exactly that. Cause the phrase not so fast Eddie is the variation of the Fast Eddie character from the Hustler.
Exactly.
You know, when you're trying to fool somebody.
Right.
So I think that's the callback from what I remember. When you say, because I mean, wasn't his name Fast Eddie, Fast Eddie Felsen?
Fast Eddie Felsen, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's where the phrase kind of, because the Hustler was one of those cultural iconic movies. And I think that, he's hustling people. And so in this case, not so fast, Eddie. You know, what are you trying to hustle? What's your scam? What are you trying to play on us? So I think that's an absolute call out to that.
Okay, it could be. And John shoots in his direction at the same time. You know, when he tries to stop, he wants to stop and says, not so fast, Eddie, and then shoots nearby him. And then he goes, "Are you crazy?" He goes, "Yeah, a little bit." And then here he says, "I'm getting the file." He goes, "No, you're not." Then John goes,
I do like this because it does show that has been one trend we get from John McClane. His cop instincts, he knows to trust him. Even if he doesn't have true evidence, he still trusts his gut. We, the audience, have been on it, obviously. But I think we accept it as John McClane. This may be one of the few, and there's not many, but this is one of those few John McClane moments where you're like, okay, that's why we like him. The everyday, ordinary man whose hunches serves him very well.
That's right. And then he says, "The key, it's your vault, isn't it, Yuri?" And then Yuri looks to Jack as if he's trying to get help from Jack, to try and convince John otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that Jack got duped. It's, Jack and you know, Michael Collins, who we saw for like 30 seconds before before he was shot. They really got duped by Yuri, because mm-hmm. the plan, even though it's a stupid plan, these guys fell for it. But I guess it doesn't say much about the CIA in this universe, you know, in the Die Hard universe.
And we mentioned that, at least we brought it up last week on Friday, about one of the plot holes is this stupid file that nobody knows what's in it, and yet they're going to go through this entire operation and have this trained, you know, undercover agent, one of the highest, you know, intel agencies in the world, and completely looks almost foolish in this movie. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. And then he goes, what? No. You put the in here, right? Meaning piecing everything together. He's doing a great job of putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, what? No.
Yeah, this is, I'll say it again, this may be the most Die Hard moment in the Die Hard 5 movie.
Right. Sure.
And isn't that funny? Like, you saying it that way, you look back, that's what makes the first three so good. It's not just the action. It's the figuring it out. It's the piecing it together. It's the jokes. It's the dialogue. And it all feels ordinary. Like, everybody could be in that position.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, they took a moment to slow this down for just a minute and let us say, oh, wait, this is John McClane.
That's right. And, you know, Jack also figures it out at the same point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we get the sense here. I know this is the other thing. That's, I guess it's a weak thing, but I have to applaud them, I guess, trying to do a father-son story about trying to connect and everything. But the fact is, I think Jack, for whatever his underlying disconnect, recognizes his dad really is a damn good detective, and he's going to trust his dad more than this guy that he thought was this whistleblower that he was going to bring, you know, to America.
Correct. And I guess it fits in, because, you know, there is the idea that as much as Jack, you know, doesn't like the way John acted while he was growing up, he still knew, hey, my dad was the guy who saved Nakatomi. My dad was the guy who saved Dulles. My dad was the guy who saved New York. My dad was the guy who saved Washington. So, you know, as much as I despise him as a father, but as mm-hmm. a detective and as a every man who is going to be able to save whatever's needed, I got to trust him for that.
Yeah, 100%. And I will say the acting here is very good for both of them. I believe the transition on his face when he suddenly is coming to terms with, you've been lying to me this whole time, and he's not happy about it.
That's right. And Yuri goes, well, no. And he goes, right? He says, I didn't know, Jack. And then he starts coughing again, you know. And, you know, he's still trying to convince Jack that he shouldn't believe what John is saying. And then John, like, turns around and is great, the next line, because he sees Alec's body on the ground, like, nearby, and he goes, hey, is that the dancer down there?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, that's a tough break for a good athlete. And then Yuri goes, Jack, you know me. Now, again, how does Jack know him? Like, Yuri,
I think what they're trying to establish is, hey, I'm your case agent with the CIA. I came to you. You were assigned to me. We were probably in close proximity this whole time to try to get this information out of Russia. So I think what he's trying to convey there is not necessarily a lifelong friendship as much as, you know, I've been assigned to you since the beginning. I've been telling you the truth, right? Right? You know that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then he mutters something in Russian. And then Jack goes, yeah, I know you. I know you. And then he points to John, but I know him better,
mm-hmm.
which is great, you know, because, again, it goes with what we were saying about the fact that you know, as much as he distrusts John as a father, he knows to trust him with his instincts, as you said before. And he then says to him, never was a file, was there, Yuri? So, of course, there's no file. It was that then, you know, John interjects and goes, of course, there's no file. It was simply bait.
Mm-hmm. Hey, plot twist.
Exactly.
Because the writer said this would be clever. Because all the other Die Hard movies have a plot twist. We need one, too.
That's right. What I needed was in this vault. Chagarin was the only one with enough power and influence to get me out of jail. I used him. I used you. And then Jack goes, what? It's all about money? And John has a great line, because then he goes, when's it not about money? Which is, if you look back at every single one of the Die Hard movies, everything was about money.
100%.
Know, all five movies, that's the bottom line is the villain is only in it for the money in the end.
You know. And after all this time, you're just a common criminal. I'm an exceptional thief.
And now that I've upgraded to kidnapping, you should be
a little more polite.
Be a little more polite, exactly.
Yeah, no. They're doing their best to do a fan fiction Die Hard movie. You know, they think they know what a Die Hard movie is supposed to have in it. They wrote all this stuff on the wall, and it's like, okay, here's the line, and here's what it's about. But it fails in many of the executions. I got to say it again. This moment, at least you get the feeling like, okay, there's just a nugget here. And again, this guy, John, I think is it Jai Courtney, the actor?
Yeah.
I think he does a good job here keeping it in the frame, in the moment. He doesn't seem like he's overacting anywhere.
Right. It's true. And the jury goes, what, you want to arrest me? And he turns to John, you're out of your jurisdiction, Detective McLean, aren't you? And John goes, I wouldn't worry too much about being arrested. See, my boy's in the CIA. No phone call. He goes, spy. And Yuri goes, goddamn Americans, you think you're so smart? He goes, no, I'm not that smart. I'm just on vacation. Again, I hate that he keeps using this line. This is a city slicker line. It makes more sense when Billy Crystal says it. It doesn't make sense when John McClane keeps saying it, especially since he says it like five times. And I think in the next few days, he's going to say it a few more times. And it's like, I don't care that you're on vacation. You know, so what?
It's a definite dumb line that somebody somewhere thought it was clever that he's constantly reminding the audience, I'm not even supposed to be here. We figured that out the first few minutes.
John McClane is always on vacation. He says the thing three out of the five movies he's on vacation. But whatever. You know, Die Hard 1 and 2, he's on vacation. 3, he's on leave. So I guess he's suspended. So maybe that's partially that. And 4, he's just roaming around Camden. You know.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. And then John says, my boy here, he's going to put a whooping on you. And then and then Jack just punches Yuri. It's like, okay.
Well, he headbutts him, right?
Pretty sure he punches him.
I think it's a headbutt. It's from the behind. It's behind angle. It's an absolute headbutt. And then he grabs him and then, you know, drags him forward, like right back where they just came from.
I do like the fact that throughout this thing, Yuri somehow is able to let Irina hear what's going on through the walkie-talkie.
When did he key the mic? Because we do have that little insert where she realizes what's happening.
Exactly. He's able to do it when we're not really paying much attention. I'm trying to see where specifically.
I don't think we ever see. There's no insert. There's no, like, again, that to me is a failure as a director. If you want to convey to the audience, it's fine that you see her listening.
We do see a point where he reaches into his. Does he reach into his jacket, or that's John reaching into his jacket?
Generally speaking, if you want to convey to the audience, you show, don't tell.
You would have
a very quick, even if it's just through this, like the camera pointing into his pocket with his hand, clicking the, you know, keying the mic or putting it in lock so that way it's constantly transmitting. You see a little transmit light. You would have something to indicate for that very brief second the bad guy is broadcasting the conversation.
Right.
And we don't get that. Right. All we get is her listening, and we have to kind of fill in the blank.
Right. And you're right. He does headbutt him. He doesn't punch him. That's just. But she hears that. She hears that they're moving with him. And they scream, they go to him, move. And she hears that. And she grabs the gun in order to be able to go try to find your father.
I could send you, Drax, and you got your shirt off and everything for it. But this is, never send a man to do a job a woman could do better.
That's true, especially in 2013. And then you know, they continue talking, and then John, as they're walking in toward, you know, deeper into the vault, and John goes, "You can say goodbye to your daughter, you dumbwit." And he goes, "Hey, wait, where is your little Solzhenitsyn?" And you know, I don't know, just the way this whole thing, you know, moves, that like Jack is hiding behind Yuri, you know, holding the gun on Yuri as he's pushing Yuri in front of him, you know, as if he's forcing him to go forward, you know, first, so that they don't shoot them. And, and John doesn't, you know, John isn't looking for cover. You know, he's there right next to Yuri, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they move forward into the vault, at one point, you know, we see Irina pop out of nowhere and just shoot at them.
And, yeah, takes a single shot. And it looks like Drax picked up another machine gun, because then he decides to fire off a volley.
That's right. And then John and Jack both take cover on different sides. We hear, "God damn it." And, you know, they're just shooting. And, you know, luckily John has a big machine gun, and so does Jack, and they start trying to return fire. But Drax is just shooting all over the place. He hits like, you know, an old rubber hose, and, you know, something comes flying out of that. Maybe it's more pixie dust.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's actually radioactive something. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't really know, do we? At least at this moment.
That's right. No clue. And then at this point, Yuri gets away, and we see that he's starting to run up the stairs as they're just shooting. And, you know, both John and Jack are shooting. And it's funny the way that they set this up, because we see Jack shooting towards the left and John shooting towards the right. So it gives us the impression that the two of them are on opposite sides of this building, warehouse, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as they're shooting, we see Irina try to shoot back at them also. And then once again, we have thankfully finished 5 more minutes of this really, really poorly written movie.
Well, again, I'll say it only because 3 times, you know, the charm, we at least had a sliver of a moment that reminds us of what this was supposed to be in terms of a Die Hard movie. We got that moment of detective work of John McClane pulling it off, pulling the threads together, letting the hunch decide which way to go. And his hunch once again proves to be true. And his son acknowledges and admires that fact. If he doesn't admire him as a dad, he certainly can admire him as a cop. And so there we go. There's the nugget in this otherwise terrible 5-minute chunk.
Yes. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No,
about this movie in general, or about this 5-minute segment?
No, I'm just going to, it's something my daughter and I were even talking about in the car yesterday. I get franchises. We love the idea of multi-movie franchises, but sometimes a trilogy is one of the best things you can do to any franchise. You get an introductory character, and if it hits and it hits on all cylinders and leaves room for a sequel, sure, go for it. But the trilogy, there's a reason why the rule of three works in decorating, the rule of three in art, in photography, you know, things that come in clusters of three. I mean, there's the old Schoolhouse Rock, 3 is a magic number. Sometimes just accept the fact that, yeah, you could capitalize on a 4th or a 5th, but then you're just going to cheapen what everyone thinks of as a great trilogy. That happened with the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy. That obviously happened with the Indiana Jones trilogy. It happened with this trilogy. You know, sometimes just go tell a different movie. Don't. I get it. It's Hollywood. They're going to count beans and they're going to make a lot of money. But you end up walking away going, it lessened the impact of what would have been a perfect trilogy.
Yeah.
I mean, even to an extent, Star Wars, I get, well, George Lucas always intended it to be more. Well, yeah, but they're not good. There's the original trilogy, and everything else falls far short.
Just about. Yeah, you and I both know that Rogue One is up there.
Oh, Rogue One. But whatever. Rogue One is a standalone movie. In other words, to me, it is the one and only prequel to the original trilogy. And so because of that, it doesn't try to do anything. In fact, name one character in that movie other than Princess Leia at the end. And then, of course, we've got Grand Moth and Darth Vader. But I mean, as far as it's its own standalone movie, there's no Mark. There's no Skywalker in there. There's no.
Nope.
I mean, it's.
No. Well, there is. Leia's there.
Well,
but
yeah,
whatever.
Later. But I mean, you know what I mean? It's a. It does what I think a prequel should have done. You mentioned that we could not have gotten these Death Star plans without a bunch of people that sacrificed their lives. So then we just go tell that story. And it's a great, in fact, it's probably one of the best suicide, World War II style suicide movies set in Star Wars.
Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. Love it. But it doesn't but they didn't go out to set off to make a trilogy. Look, The Hobbit screwed that up. The Lord of the Rings was a great giant book that they made J.R.R. Tolkien release in three parts. It was written as one book, so he just released it in three parts. So to me, even though it's three movies, it's a perfect trilogy because it's really one big story. They tried to do the same thing with The Hobbit. The Hobbit was always meant to be a book, not three, and that's why it's far, far lesser in quality and outcome than Lord of the Rings.
Because they had to stretch things out there also.
Right, and it just, when you try to shoehorn these kinds of things, you almost, as an audience member, even if you're not a filmmaker, if you're not a writer, if you're not a cinematographer, you're not an actor, you still sense it. You're like, it just doesn't feel right.
Right.
And that's the problem with 4 and 5 of Die Hard. You want to like them. You really do. I mean, let's face it. I like Bruce Willis. I think I like Bruce Willis's movies simply because I think I like Bruce Willis. Sometimes the movies are probably should be thought of lesser in my mind, but because Bruce Willis is in it, I'm like, well, you know, it is Bruce Willis. I feel the same way with these two. I want to like them, but I find myself going, I can't.
Well, because again, he's a 58-year-old Bruce Willis instead, and this is 25 years after the first movie came out when he was, 35. So
yeah, but it's not necessarily his age. He does a great job selling the acting part. He's actually, I think, a better actor, but. It's just not a good movie.
Well, that's the problem. You can have the best actor ever, and if the script isn't up to par, it's not going to help. Right.
Yeah, you can only go so far. At some point, a poorly thought out plot and premise, it doesn't matter how talented your cast and crew.
That's right.
That's the irony. You know, having been involved in films, I've said this before, it's crazy because it takes just as much effort in terms of man hours, cost, expectation, marketing. It takes just as much effort to make a bad movie as it does to make a good. The difference is the good movies have somebody at one point said, before we make this, do we like the story?
That's right. The other one's like, okay, let's just try and make money.
Yeah, let's just make money. Yeah. Just throw something together. The audience is not going to ask these questions. No one's ever going to like detail it. It's John McClane. They'll come. They'll love it.
That's right. And hey, let's release it Valentine's Day.
A good date night movie.
There you go. Perfect. All right. So every day we have a game called State Your Motto, where I will give I will randomly choose a state, and my guest, I will give my guest three options of what could be the true state motto. All right. So your state for today is Ohio.
Okay.
All right. So your choices are A, industry, B, strong deeds, gentle words, or C, with God, all things are possible.
Did you hint at this last Friday? Because I'm going to go, it was the motto for a different state. So I'm going to say, with God, all things are possible.
You are correct. That is Ohio.
Yeah, something, we mentioned something to that on Friday.
I don't think so.
Didn't you give it as an alternative for... What state were we talking about?
No, we were talking about Minnesota on Friday.
Minnesota,
And we had Under God, the People Rule.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
But that's not Ohio either.
For some reason, I was thinking about the God one, and so that's why I went with God, all things are possible. Okay, yeah, I got lucky.
Apparently. All right.
I like that. Good. Now, my wife is always mad when I do that because she's like, how come you can't pick lottery numbers that way? I'm like, that's not how my brain works. I'm good at useless trivia, but I can't pick the numbers.
All right. Well, speaking of useless trivia, so now we will play a trivia game where I will give you five diehard related trivia questions related to all five movies. Maybe you'll get something from this movie also. Who knows? So let's spin the wheel and see what we're going to get for Alan. What is going to be your trivia question? So your first question is from Die Hard 3. All right. Mm-hmm. Who plays McClane's detective colleague, Joe Lambert?
Isn't it the, what's his name? He was in Dances with Wolves. He's an Indian American actor. Graham Greene.
Very good. Excellent.
Oh my God. I was like, I see him. I'm seeing him in Tatanka. I'm like,
Tatanka. That's right.
I like, what the hell's his name?
Very good. You got the Tatanka. There you go. All right. Excellent. All right. Now we will spin again and see what the next question will be for Alan. And the wheel goes around and you're going to get something from Die Hard 4. Okay. In what city does Warlock live in?
What's his face? Kevin Smith's character, right?
That is correct. Yes.
That's where they was. Oh, that's the scene. Oh my God. Was it Baltimore? Baltimore.
Yes, it is Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Excellent. Nicely done.
All right. Yeah. Now I feel like I've just used all my luck juice. I've used all my pixie dust. I need one from 1, 2, or 3. I like those better.
All right, and you get one from Die Hard 1.
Oh, good.
Thank you. All right. Where was the other Agent Johnson when the first Johnson was in Saigon?
I was in, what does he say? I was in school. What does he say? Middle school? I was in junior high, kid.
That's right. Excellent.
Just like Saigon. I was in junior high.
Yeah, those guys got along really well.
We're going to need some new FBI guys.
That's right. All right, let's spin the wheel again for Alan's fourth trivia question. It was inevitable. You were going to get a question from this movie. Okay. Where is this film's MacGuffin, the file on Shigarin, located?
Well, if it's based on where we are here, it's supposed to be in Chernobyl.
That's right.
Considering he goes, hold, I'm going to go get the file now.
That's right.
There is no file.
There is no file, exactly. Well,
I have detailed files. No.
Right, it's in Chernobyl, Pripyat. Pripyat? I don't know how to pronounce that.
Pripyat?
Yeah,
is it Pripyat?
I actually saw it.
I think it's Pripyat. Pripyat.
I saw it spelled both ways.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Okay, and now we will go for Alan's final trivia question. And it will be from Die Hard 4 again. Okay. Where is Lucy studying?
In what university is Lucy studying? It's Ivy League. It's Ivy League. It's Jersey. It's Rutgers. Rutgers. Rutgers okay. University.
All right. So, Alan, would you like to, for one final time this season, tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Yeah. If you are now, I try to have some fun as well in my show, but I'm definitely much more about the news talk format. So, if you want to know what's going on news of the day in a news/political talk show, you can look for The Alan Sanders Show wherever you find your podcast. I'm also on Facebook, X, Instagram, Gather Truth Social, and YouTube, all under The Alan Sanders Show. You can also send me an email if you want, thealansandersshow@gmail.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So I will be back tomorrow with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. We'll be right back.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.